Welcome, everyone, to the new episode of the Truth in Rally podcast. This past Tuesday in Texas, in an elementary school, more than 15 people lost their lives. Majority are elementary students. Another mass shooting, third mass shooting in less than a month. Parents lost their child. This is a crazy situation because no matter what, it's not a great situation. For me, what hits home the most is that my child is in school. Goes to a high school where this situation can occur. And I have to have faith that this school can protect her. That this school would do the right thing to protect the students if this crazy situation occurs in their school. And they know how to address the situation if it occurs. This is a new thing. Fire drills have always been associated with schools. What do we do when fire drills happen? Schools have been doing it for years. But now the new thing that has to be put into place, that has to be discussed, is how do we address situations when a person has a gun? How do we protect our students? How do we protect our staff? Is it that now we have to put glass in the glass that it's different things inside the school that's bulletproof that will protect kids from getting in, that it's very easy to lock and very hard to break into? Is that the new norm? How do we protect these kids? This is hard. Sandy Hook for me was hard. My daughter was the same age as the kids that died. This is hard. Because I have assumptions on how we can make things better. I do. Because, ladies and gentlemen, there are a lot of law-abiding gun owners who do not commit crimes with guns. There are a lot of law-abiding people with gun licenses who don't do mass shootings. But the individuals, it feels like, that do these mass shootings have warning signs. At times, that maybe the new thing that we should be doing with guns is respecting the craft of what guns are. Guns kill, guns protect, guns harm, guns could do a lot of different things in seconds. Not in minutes, not in hours, not in days, in seconds. So how do we respect a gun? Why is it that we don't look at guns and say there has to be a training? We have to shake the cobwebs on which individuals can have guns and which individuals cannot have guns. Having guns should not be attached to just making money. It should be attached to how do we not allow individuals who are not capable of mentally having a gun and not doing a mass shooting? What alarming signs are out there that we have to act on quickly? Not slowly, but quickly. How do we let these people know that once you say violent things and show your gun and talk about wanting to kill people, that we're going to come to your doorstep and we will arrest you? The minute you say it on social media, we will be looking for you. It's a crazy situation. It's crazy that there's nobody that is basically the mediator in politicians. It just feels like a Democrat versus a Republican situation where it'll never come to a solution because both are looking at these situations in a fashion where it has to be Republican way or it has to be a Democrat way. We can't admit that the other party made some good points. We can't admit that the way the situation is going to work out is if we work together. It doesn't feel like that's what they're trying to do. And it's scary. In less than 200 days in 2022, there have been over 200 mass shootings in America, and there's no solution to slow it down. None. And it's scary. What do we do? How do we go out tomorrow and not be scared? We just came through, and we're still going through, a pandemic attached to COVID, with COVID, which was crazy for all of us. But will the new pandemic be that mass shootings will increase, the rate will increase even more, to the point where maybe nobody goes out anymore? No one enjoys the sunshine because they're scared. No one goes out past a certain time because they're scared. That we allow our kids who are already super into technology and TV stay home even more because we cannot protect them and because they don't feel safe. It's a crazy situation right now in America. And I pray to God that there's somebody in the American government that could take a step back and be the mediator and say, we can't move forward unless we work together. Simple. Work together. Put the differences aside and work together. But right now, I have no faith in the American government because it seems like two extreme groups who are butting heads who don't want to come to a resolution. And because of that, we'll be talking about another mass shooting within the next couple weeks. And saying, having another moment of silence. And having another moment of being angry and sad and disappointed. And criticizing the American government. And criticizing the NRA and others. It's a crazy situation. But let's get back into sports. So last week, the Western Conference, again, like I said, started. Dallas has managed not to get swept since last week. They managed to win a game. In game four, rather than getting swept, they were able to win game four. Game five will happen tonight. The question of the day is, can they beat a Golden State team in Golden State? Or will they go home? Let's give props to a coach right now. Jason Kidd. Did anybody think that Jason Kidd was going to be able to do this with the Mavs this year? To lead them to the Western Conference Finals? Did anyone believe that he was going to be able to go to the Western Conference Finals without the second elite player? Did any of us think that? I don't think so. And the funny thing is, the Mavs in the Western Conference Finals, the Lakers got worse. So it's just kind of funny how he's prospering and the Lakers trended down while the Mavs trended up. Just kind of crazy situation. Maybe he was the brain to the NBA championship during the COVID bubble in Florida. Just saying. I mean, just putting it out there. One of the interesting things that is associated with the Dallas Mavericks in this series versus the Golden State Warriors is that they have been attempting 40-plus threes attempts per game. Per game. It's like they live and die by the three. Crazy to see, hear that. I hope they're able to force a game six. I hope that they can make it even a game seven. It will be an interesting, very interesting series. Win or loss. Win or lose. If they do make it go, if the Mavs are able to make the series go into a game six, credit to Jason Kidd, credit to Luka, credit to the Mavs. Now, last week, you know, I was talking about salaries, and I was talking about the top six guys who are going to get paid in the NBA next year, who and how crazy that these guys are getting paid that amount and more. I don't know what's made me look at the Dallas Mavericks payroll and how much these players are getting paid. Oh, actually, no, correction, I do. The idea that Luka doesn't have a second elite guy, one of the things I was looking at, ladies and gentlemen, was do they have the cap space to get him a second elite player next to him? Is that what Luka needs? And do they have the cap space? And then, ladies and gentlemen, they don't have the cap space. But then I looked at it. Then a player stuck out to me. A player stuck out to me because he's making $16 million per season. And he doesn't play that pretty good. He's not an outstanding rebounder. He's not a great assist guy. He doesn't play 30-plus minutes. He's not known for defense. But yet, because he had one season in where he scored 15 points per game, and he was a decent three-point shooter, he had a $16 million per year contract. And I'm talking about Davis. I'm probably going to say his last name, Bertans, the Dallas Mavericks. How in the world did he get this? Like I said, he doesn't rebound good. He doesn't average 16 points a game, and yet he's making $16 million per year. I tell you, the NBA contracts are ridiculous. If you look at the closers in Major League Baseball, a majority of the top 10 Major League Baseball closers are not getting paid $16 million per year. If you look at what closers are responsible of doing at a game versus what Davis Bertans is supposed to do in a game, you would say, wait a minute, a closer is getting paid $16 million or less, he should be getting paid double. A closer has more pressure on his back. The closer will go to an all-star game because of what he does towards the end of the game. Davis Bertans, making $16 million a year, will never be an all-star player. And it's crazy how in the NBA, rather than looking at someone's track record, they look at one good year and say that that guy is automatically worth $16 million per year. And this is a sport that has a salary cap. Isn't that crazy? I wouldn't even pay him. I would pay him at least $8 million or less. Because the idea is that he can't contribute at a high level anywhere else, that he's not even starting for this team. He wasn't even mentioned to be a sixth man of the year in the NBA, and yet he's getting paid $16 million. Crazy situation, ladies and gentlemen. So now let's talk about the Eastern Conference Finals, where it feels like it's kind of a trade back and forth in terms of first Miami, then Boston, back and forth, back and forth. Every game seems to have been where either Boston or Miami has won by 10 points or more, except for Game 3, where it was less than 10 points. I think it was whoever won Game 3 was 109 to 103, which is less than 10 points. But besides that, in the other four games, every team that's won between Boston and Miami has won by 10 points or more. Now, Game 3 was a crazy situation. Jimmy Butler got hurt, and he was able to come back and play in Game 4 and Game 5. But the truth is, it's the playoffs and he's playing. And what's the reality? If this wasn't the playoffs, he would be sitting right now, because right now, his offensive game is not what it was prior to Game 3. He doesn't look like that dominant force that I thought he was in the playoffs. a guy who I thought was the same guy who led Miami in the NBA bubble to the NBA championship versus the Lakers. I thought Jimmy Butler was going to be able to do that this playoffs because statistically he improved in every category that you want him to improve in the playoffs. He didn't digress. He didn't get worse. He got better. But he got hurt and he came back and he's trying his best to help the Heat win, but it's not working. He went 4-for-18 last night, ladies and gentlemen. 4-for-18. I give it to him for trying, but the reality is, ladies and gentlemen, his lack of scoring, his lack of efficiency is hurting the Heat. And eventually Boston may even win game 6 because of Jimmy Butler not being the Jimmy Butler who was involved in the playoffs for the Heat prior to game 3, prior to the injury. Now, Kyrie Irving, ladies and gentlemen, could be on his way out of Brooklyn. It's been said that if he does not commit to next year with Brooklyn, Brooklyn can be looking to be doing a sign and trade for him. Is this smart? Some would say this is a smart idea because it feels like Kyrie Irving has always found a way not to be committed to Brooklyn. He's always found a way to dictate how he will approach the season. He dictated who became head coach. He dictated how he got to Brooklyn. And Brooklyn in 3 seasons has not been to an Eastern Conference final, hasn't been to an NBA championship. And in result, he can potentially not be with Brooklyn next year. Now, I think to a certain extent, I would trade him. But seeing who he's been and who has become, why would I want him? Why would I want a guy who I feel automatically right now is going to miss 20 games or more? Just think about that. You know he's elite, but you also know that he's going to miss at least 20 games or more. We all know because of the vaccination situation that it stopped the Nets from being better than a 7-seed team in the Eastern Conference. So the question is, what do the Nets do? Especially with Ben Simmons being not even playing one game yet, you don't even know who you're getting next year. So would it be smart to let Kyrie Irving go somewhere else, get draft picks, get multiple players? No matter what, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be interesting because the idea that you go into the fourth season with him and if he does the same thing again, this is the same thing. The Nets can't complain about Kyrie Irving if they don't learn from Kyrie Irving's mistakes and what Kyrie Irving has shown them. They will make the same mistake again and they will suffer in wins and losses where they are placed in the seed in the Eastern Conference, and if they know all these things already, all these negatives that Kyrie Irving has presented to them, why should they move forward with him unless they like the pain that has existed and has attached to Kyrie Irving so far in his tenure with the Brooklyn Nets? Long story short, this offseason could be very interesting to see what happens with the Nets. What do they do? Because so far, the Durant and Irving situation has not worked to their favor. Off to the NFL. The NFL The NFL has not allowed Colin Kaepernick to re-enter the NFL game. Has not allowed him back on any NFL team. Not that they have suspended him. Not because they don't think he's played, but because of his being against the police and kneeling and more and all the hatred he's gotten, teams have stayed away from Colin Kaepernick and basically not give him a chance. The Raiders said this past week, we'll give you a tryout. Now, my truth is, I don't think he's going to get signed. And the reality is, why? He's not a criminal. He hasn't committed any crimes. You know, Michael Vick went to jail and got arrested for crimes and got a second chance. Kaepernick, who committed no crimes, who has done no jail sentence, but yet has never got a second chance in the NFL, not even a game. I hope he signs, but the truth is, I don't think he is. And the reality is, it's sad. Off to baseball. So Josh Donaldson, ladies and gentlemen, this past weekend called Tim Anderson, shortstop of the White Sox, Chicago White Sox, Jackie, a reference to Jackie Robinson. Anderson saw offense to the statement. Danielson says, "How are you offended by the situation, by this comment, if I've said it in the past?" Josh Donaldson claims, based on an article that was in the past that was done with Tim Anderson, that he attached his name to Jackie Robinson for whatever reason and in comparison. So Josh Donaldson thought it was funny or a way to get under the skin of Tim Anderson by calling him Jackie. Now, when Josh Donaldson said that he's done this before, called him Jackie, especially if Josh Donaldson did this calling him Jackie in the past and Tim Anderson never said anything in the past, and I was holding out that maybe Josh Donaldson is not bad. Maybe he's not bad, because if other players says, wait a minute, he did say it, and Tim Anderson said nothing in regards of saying Jackie. Now it seems like Josh Donaldson is lying, because there's not one player who has taken a step forward and said, yes, Tim Anderson and Josh Anderson have talked about Jackie in the past. And it was against this series, it was in this month, and it was at this situation. But no player has mentioned it. I mean, right now it would have been Minnesota, because last year Josh Donaldson played with Minnesota. So there would have been multiple games last season, the last two seasons, where the Twins and the White Sox would have faced each other, where Josh Donaldson would have had the opportunity to say Jackie to Tim Anderson. But the truth is, no Minnesota Twins player has mentioned or spoken up and said, yes, it happened. So now, in regards of the situation, Tim Anderson has said it's offensive. Josh Donaldson has been suspended. He's trying to appeal it. Josh Donaldson has apologized by saying the word Jackie and saying that he also stands by his comments. So it's kind of awkward. How do you approach a situation where a guy's apologizing and standing by a comment that he said in the past that he swears he said in front of you and you said nothing, but yet you deny it and now say it's offensive? It's a crazy situation. But the truth is, Josh Donaldson messed up. Tim Anderson is offended. And it's a sad day in baseball when we're talking about Jackie Robinson and having him in any kind of talk in the sense of trying to criticize or trying to get to the under the skin of an opponent by using his name, knowing that Jackie Robinson entered Major League Baseball where racist people were yelling random things to him to get under his skin, to make him act up, to make him feel uncomfortable and more. Let's talk about another team in baseball. What is up with the Atlanta Braves, the World Series champion? After 44 games, ladies and gentlemen, they are 2 games under 500. Now, I am that kind of person that I dissect certain situations and look at different situations in regards of performance. And one of the things I look at is how is Atlanta Braves home? How are they away? How are they during the day? How are they during the night? What is the situations that's hurting them? What are they not capitalizing? What are they not adjusting on? So, for example, at home, the Atlanta Braves hit 251 as a team. But away, they hit 213. Not a good drop off. In day games, the Atlanta Braves hit 203 during day games. Horrible yet again. In night games, they hit 249. Big drop off. And then I looked at what is the record during the day games versus night? So far this season, the Atlanta Braves have played 15 games during the day and 29 at night. During day games, they are 4-11. And during night games, they're 17-2, which is probably one of the best things for them. Now, I look at this situation and I say, man, Brian, probably going to say his name on Snicker, whatever his name is, has to assess what is happening. What are they doing different between home and away games, day games versus night games? How do we make adjustments where the team that plays at night resembles the team that plays during the day? The team that plays at home, it resembles the same team that plays away. The team that plays during day games resembles the same team that plays at night. He has to make that adjustment. Because how will this team go back to the playoffs? Now, listen, last season, after 89 games of the season, the Atlanta Braves were one game under 500. But statistically, there was never this drop-off that I just expressed between home games and away games, night games versus day games. There was no drop-off to this extent. It's two extremes, you know, and these two extremes will hurt this team eventually down the road if adjustments don't happen. Now, AEW will have its Double or Nothing pay-per-view this weekend, this Sunday. Will you be watching? Will CM Punk become a world champion after 7 years of not being a champion? It seems like Bryan Danielson is healthy because he has a match this upcoming Friday on Rampage. Now, in terms of WWE, Matt Riddle and Randy Orton lost their Raw Tag Team Champion belts this past Friday on SmackDown to the Usos. But I look at this situation in where the Usos became the unified or universal tag team champions in WWE as a way to play with the minds of the Usos after the Trini situation of her working out. Did they really want the Usos to win? Or is this a tactic to make the Usos happy and not look over at the situation with Trinity and Fatu and make them happy during this time where they can easily be angry at what WWE is doing to Trinity Fatu and Sasha Banks? Now, it feels like Sasha Banks and Trinity Fatu will leave sooner or later from WWE. It was said last week that their contract is expiring soon. Now, it has been said one of the reasons why Sasha Banks has been angry is because she was promised a spot during WrestleMania to fight Charlotte Flair, but her spot in WrestleMania got handed to Ronda Rousey. Now, I understand that WrestleMania is considered the Super Bowl of WWE, and the idea, the big moment that you could have had a title match versus Charlotte Flair in WrestleMania, and yet it was taken away from you, no wrestler would be happy. You know, there's one thing if Charlotte Flair got hurt or Sasha Banks got hurt and things change. But the idea that everything was pointing towards Sasha Banks being in the WrestleMania in the competition for the WWE title, and it got nixed to help boost ratings or help make Ronda Rousey happy is crazy. Now, the question is, where do they go from here? What happens with Sasha Banks? Does Sasha Banks and WWE fix the situation? Does WWE convince Sasha Banks, if you stay and resign, we'll give you a lengthy competition for the WWE women's title versus Ronda Rousey, not just a short one, not just one match, not just one promo and just one night. We'll make it a thing where you guys face each other two or three times, the best out of three. Do they do that, or do they allow her contract to expire? Do they allow her to go to AEW? And does Sasha Banks want to do that? Because listen, ladies and gentlemen, she leaves WWE, she can no longer be the boss. Things have to change in how she approaches her matches to a certain extent. She cannot be the same character. She cannot look the same way and have and be the same way, because if unless this is her character and this is what she created, but if WWE created this, she can't go to AEW and be the same person. So it's kind of crazy. Will Sasha Banks be okay with reinventing herself enough so that WWE is not angry and she could still have a career? Will fans like it? I mean, she's 30 years old. She still has a chance to experiment with a couple of things before she becomes famous again. But the truth is, what will her new name be? What would be her new approach to events? Will she change the way she does promos? Will she change the way she does match? Will she change anything? How much will she change? How much will fans gravitate to it? Because the truth is, fans are gravitating to the boss. But if the boss is no longer attached to Miss Sasha Banks, will fans follow the new role and the new approach, Sasha Banks? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that is my episode. You could find my episode on any podcast app like Apple, Spotify, Anchor, Overcast, and more, ladies and gentlemen. You can subscribe to my podcast on Instagram and TikTok. And one more thing, ladies and gentlemen, have a great day and even better night. Bye-bye.